Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Vavro and Austin Underground. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Guys, tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking, get your questions in. We'll get to those here in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about the news of the day. Bobby, you're still out there in Sandestin, Florida for the SEC meetings today, the last day of those meetings. So what are you expecting today, and what did you learn yesterday?
Learned quite a bit. I mean, yesterday, guys, we first reported on it on Tuesday morning. The roster considerations for college football are coming. Josh Heupel came out before the media yesterday. He was the only coach to really speak about it yesterday. And he said they had a 3.5-4 hour meeting. The coaches did all in a peer like meeting, right? That was in private. And of that 3.5-4 hour meeting, Josh Heupel said that roster restrictions / caps was the majority, vast majority of that discussion. I think the coaches right now are kind of trying to figure out what's best. They may not know what's best, right? And that's a big piece of it. So that's come out of it, Blake. That's been very interesting for me. Then also there started to be more talk yesterday about whether or not the SEC would go to an 8 or 9 game schedule in 2026. Now, not 24 or 25, but in 2026. Texas has been a proponent of the 9-game schedule because Texas is one of the few teams in the conference that has a conference game at a neutral site in the Texas OU game, right? And so Texas wants that 9-game conference schedule so they can always be guaranteed 4 conference home games for the season ticket holders to have better games. But there have been others that have said, we like 8. So that's kind of on the agenda, but it's taking a back seat. I really do believe that roster restrictions, the house settlement, 22% of revenue heading off. It's a lot of money, and they are thinking right now, at least, that they're going to have some sort of scholarship reductions or restrictions in college football beyond what it is today. As far as what's on tap today, athletic directors meet again this morning. I'm going over there just a few minutes after we finish the show this morning to hear more from Chris Del Conte and perhaps some other athletic directors as well about what they think.
So when we talk about roster restrictions, do you think it's more walk-ons than 85 number, because the coaches are going to fight to keep their 85 number? That's not going to go without a fight.
The coaches, I think, are a little bit of shock.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this is being foisted on them. And, you know, what's being pointed out too is, well, that's nice that you don't want to pay $22 million to the players, but because of this new college football playoff, aren't you getting $22 million back per team? You know what I mean? And so where's the give and take there? But I think there's another piece of this that kind of complexifies the matter. And that's, where does Title IX sit in all of this? So I do think that the coaches want 85 at least. I think that, and so Jay Kennedy asked, can Texas pay its athletes more than Vandy due to the 22% rule? I think there's going to be a cap on that so that it's not everybody's playing with the same number up to a certain amount. And Vandy will decide whether or not they'll go up to the same amount as Texas is going up to. Like, Texas won't be able to outspend everybody else based on the 22% rule. But just for competitive fairness. But I think what would be interesting there, and Jerry, back to your question, they are very clear, including Greg Sankey, the commissioner, who spoke again late yesterday. They don't know what the rules are going to be. They're trying to define them here. And I think what's maybe most exciting to me, and I wrote an article this morning on Texas Football, what is most exciting to me is that here at the SEC meetings, I feel like the football coaches and the athletic directors are making the decisions for the future of college football. It is not the NCAA in Indianapolis or somewhere else that is just as tied to St. Francis of Pennsylvania as they are to Texas. And so you get a real sense, and compared to even the Big 12 doesn't have much of a say. They'll get a vote. But I'm telling you, the coaches here and the athletic directors, they're being asked to shape the future of college football. That's what's going on in Destin right now. The athletic directors, again, meeting. I think their meeting starts at 9 a.m. this morning, and it'll go to noon. And then we'll hopefully get to talk to those guys after it. But it's going Bob, to see what else is happening. One other thing I want to mention, Greg Sankey said that he will also likely announce some times for a few games this year, a few marquee games. I'm waiting to see if Texas and Georgia matchup, the timing of that is announced today. So we'll be on the lookout.
Bobby, can you expand on this question a little bit for those that don't really know what Title IX actually is and how that's affecting, could affect things?
Yeah, Title IX is a national law that requires universities that receive public funding, like Texas, like Alabama or Florida or Georgia or any of the others, to equally pay women and men in college athletics. And across any endeavor, actually, in college. And it needs to represent the student body. And so what's happening here is this 22%, how's it going to be divided up? Well, if it's from a revenue perspective, 20 of the 22% should go to football, right? Well, according to Title IX, it should be 11 and 11. Now, is that fair? Is that, you know, and to... The piece that is very interesting right now, in my opinion, Jerry and Blake, is they don't know, and yet they're trying to make decisions. Like, they don't know the answer to Title IX yet about, you know, equity. Do you have to pay them equal to revenue or just equal, period, based on their output? And so it's a – they think that there's going to be lawsuits before. And so I'm sitting here looking at this. I feel like the coaches and the athletic directors are trying to, and I'm going to use this metaphor that somebody else had yesterday. They're trying to bring this cruise ship into port, right? Uh-huh. Say you're down in Galveston, yeah, or in Fort Lauderdale, you're bringing this huge monster, $180 million, whatever, right, into port, and all of a sudden you can't see anything because it's all fogged in. You don't know which way to drive. That's what it feels like these coaches are going through right now. They're in a fog, and they're just trying to get to port. And I don't know. Interesting, in my opinion.
Well, something else that Texas fans found interesting yesterday, Jerry, was that they gained a new commitment from a running back. Can you tell folks about that?
Yeah, absolutely. James Simon, four-star running back out of Shreveport Calvary Baptist, committed to Texas as expected over Notre Dame and Texas A&M. Alabama and LSU had some hats at the table, but that really wasn't realistic. It was Texas over Notre Dame and Texas A&M for James Simon, the four-star running back out of Calvary Baptist in Shreveport. Big win. Texas, another year, they get a prospect from Louisiana in a class under Steve Sarkisian. That makes every class since Sark has been at Texas. Because obviously when you saw that staff being built out by Sarkisian when he was hired, whether that was Terry Joseph, whether that was Bo Davis, whether that was Brandon Harris in a recruiting support role, whether it was Cortez Hankton's brother as a analyst on the staff, there were a lot of Louisiana ties on the Texas staff, the initial Texas staff under Steve Sarkisian. So you knew that was going to be an area of emphasis for Texas. And this is a big win because it's on I-20, guys. And you also have Aiden Anding, who liked about every James Simon commitment thing on Instagram or Twitter yesterday. Aiden Anding, a corner who should be a four-star when these rankings get recalibrated, out of Rustin High in Louisiana, one of the top two or three corners on the board for Texas since he popped onto the radar. That's another I-20 guy that will officially visit June 21st through 23rd when James Simon makes his official visit. But Tashard Choice now 6'7". He's really gone 6 of 7 on his targets in the last three classes at Texas, dating back to Cedric Baxter, Trey Wisner, then Jarrett Gibson, Christian Clark last year, then Ricky Stewart from Chapel Hill this year, now James Simon, Jordan Davison, the one that I put in, the one that Texas would have liked to get. They didn't get him. So 6 of 7, James Simon fits the inside zone, the SEC kind of run scheme and that power run, that lean. See, he has a lean and he has a lean even in that picture. That's when somebody has a lean. James Simon, he had about 1,600 yards last year for a state championship Calvary Baptist team. Those that aren't familiar with Calvary Baptist, that school kind of began to get a lot of players when Shreveport Evangel initially, all that staff broke up well over a decade ago. So that kind of put Calvary Baptist more on the map. They won a state title this last year, beat a couple of three really good teams on the way to doing it. When you see the 1,600 yards Simon put up, realize he didn't carry the ball a lot early in the season, midway through the season. They had some blowout games. There was one game he didn't even carry it once. He caught three passes. So his 1,600 yards, he had a lot of that in the playoffs. I think he had over a third of that in the last three playoff games. So when he started carrying it 20-plus times, averaging more than 20 carries. But he's got power. What I really like about James Simon, there's three things. He has jump cut, he has skip cut, and he has backside vision, right? So he presses the hole with also being patient. But the one thing I really like is he understands how to play high to low. He understands when to drop his pads and drop his hips and create optimal power on contact. Obviously, he should. His father was a tremendous running back at Louisiana Tech, played briefly in the NFL, has coached in college for over a decade. So he should have a great understanding and feel for the position. I also like, Bobby, how well he catches the ball out of the backfield. I think he's a really good fit in the Texas offense, especially what Steve Sarkisian and those guys want to do headed into the SEC.
I like the fact that, Jerry, you talk about watching these clips. Makes a lot of people miss at the second level.
Yeah.
That will take 4 to 7 yard runs into 15 to 25 yard runs, especially on the college level and pro level. That's what they're looking for, is that the ability to make people miss just enough to gain another 7 to 10 yards in the run game. And he makes a lot of people miss at the second level. That's a big piece. For what James Simon brings. It's interesting you mentioned about Aiden Anding and how that might impact Aiden Anding, young man out of Rustin, Louisiana. That would be a big knock if those two kind of want to play at the same school, because Texas certainly needs a corner in this class right now. Need to start focusing on defense as we move into these June official visits, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's the obviously looking at the Texas commit list. Just kind of going over that real quick. So Texas has now got 4 players from out of state on the commit list, guys. So 40% of that class is from out of state. I mean, that's a big number. You have KJ Lacy out of Alabama. You have Mari Winston, a tight end out of Georgia. You have Brandon Brown, the D lineman out of Florida. And now you have James Simon out of Louisiana. So 4 out of state players in the class. There's 18, I believe, official visitors from out of state coming in June. 4 of those obviously count the 4 commitments. But then 3 of your commitments outside of that are from the DFW area. Elijah Barnes, top 100 prospect in the country, linebacker. Devin and Jordan Coleman out of Cedar Hill, all from the Blake's favorite District of Doom there along I-20. We're also Duncanville and DeSoto, Waxahachie, and the Mesquite Horn. In Lancaster play now. And then outside of that, you have 2 from East Texas, which Texas hasn't got as many guys from East Texas. East Texas has kind of been more, I don't know, a little bit more inconsistent on the national level guys. They've had a couple of lulls cycles, but this is a really up cycle. I think 26 will be 2. So you have Ricky Stewart and you have Lance Jackson, who may end up being a 5-star. Then you have 1 prospect from the Golden Triangle area, Jackson Christian. So when will Texas hit first in the Houston area? I think it'll be in the June official visits. That'll be interesting to see. All right, guys, I'm going to do it real quick. I'm going to go through the questions. We call it recruiting speed dating, right? So I'm going to hit on about four or five questions for you guys real quick. Burn Orange Horn, which of the OL prospects is suffering fear of being left out? Look, I think we talked about this. Once Jackson Christian committed, I think that was going to speed up timelines in the state, especially those kind of swing players and your interior players. Jordan Devin Coleman, boom, to Texas. Tyler Thomas didn't have a spot at Texas anymore. Boom, he commits to A&M. So those guys came off the board really quickly. I think Texas is pretty much set now. John Mills, he has a spot in this class out of San Francisco, St. Ignatius. Then it comes down to the three tackles. Comes down to Michael Fasusi, Nick Brooks from Cedar Rapids, JFK High, and Lamont Rogers. Lamont Rogers and Nick Brooks visit June 14th. And then obviously Michael Fasusi is June 21st. John Mills is June 14th as well. So I think it's kind of setting up there about perfectly for what Kyle Flood was looking for in this class. Devin Coleman, a center guard. Jackson Christian, a guard. Jordan Coleman is a swing guy, could be a right tackle, probably a guard. I think John Mills may be a right tackle, could play guard. Then you have your three traditional tackles there. So we'll see if Texas goes to five or six on the offensive line class. So that'll be interesting. E. Kim asks, does Michael Fasusi prevent Texas from landing John Turrentine, Stars, or Oilers for the Cup Finals? That was a great hockey game last night, by the way. I think it will hurt you a little bit if Texas gets Fasusi, because both guys are highly ranked left tackles, John Turrentine in 2026, right? But there was a question on OnTexasFootball.com about this. I believe it was Wednesday. It may have been Tuesday. You know, if Texas thought one guy was better than the other, how does that affect the do you take Fasusi? Absolutely, you take Fasusi. If Fasusi wants to come, he's got a spot at the University of Texas. They would deal with the recruitment of John Turrentine after. I don't see a scenario where if you have two really, really good football players, you turn down a senior in 25 for the recruitment of a junior in 26. Mack Brown once told Andrew Luck, no, I don't have an offer, because he already had Garrett Gilbert. How'd that work out? That's a tough thing to do, in my estimation, and probably not the smart thing to do in recruiting. Jose Rodriguez, good morning, gents. How many players from the A&M class was UT actually recruiting and wanting? That's a good question. Adonis Curry, the corner from Quartz Hill, Lancaster, California. The one guy, Johnny Nansen, hadn't been able to get on campus. Talented corner. I think Texas would have loved to get Adonis Curry on campus for a June official visit. He committed to Texas A&M. That's one. The offensive tackle from Bridgeland, Jonte Newman, Texas had scheduled for an official visit June 14th. I would have been talking about four tackles instead of three with that group. Texas really liked Jonte Newman. They went by the school twice, once during the season, once in January. So he's a guy, obviously. You know, it's interesting. I think Texas would have taken a commitment from Kobe Sellers, but once Aiden Anning popped onto the radar, they went more – they've gone harder after Aiden Anning. Who's going to be the better player one day? That'll be decided on the field. But just to kind of how recruiting kind of shift and change is a little bit. So that is I'm trying to think if there's any other. Okay, here's King Me. Over under, Texas signs 3 5 stars in a 25 class. I think he meant 25 class. I do think Texas will have 3 5 stars in the class. Basketball question here. Since we didn't want to pay JT Toppin, is it likely we won't go after Coleman? 100%, because Coleman's asking for more. It's ridiculous right now on that. And I was, is Lance Jackson an edge or DL? Jay Lee asked. He's an edge for me, Bobby. I mean, he's 6'5 and a half, 263. He'll be 275, 280 pounds. But I think he's an edge athlete with bonus size at the edge spot.
You mean Bobby?
Okay.
I like him as a defensive end. Yeah. I don't know that he's a true edge in that way. He's more of a five technique, in my opinion, than a seven. Jerry, if that makes sense, playing head up on the tackle and can still get to the quarterback in that position. It gives your defense more flexibility if he can do that and you have a guy that's special like that. which is one of the reasons why I think he's underrated in some respects, but Texas, I think, has him properly rated. You know what I mean? As an important recruit for them as well. All right, I need to say thank you and want to say thank you to our sponsor. Each and every Thursday's Coffee and Football brought to you by our friend Rick Vavro over at Austin Underground. Since 2004, Austin Underground has specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider too risky. Rick and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground.
And we want to thank them for sponsoring each and every Thursday right here on Coffee and Football. And guys, it is Thursday, which means Texas softball plays tonight in the Women's College World Series. That game takes place at 7 p.m. against Stanford. And I got to give a quick shout out to Reese Atwood. She like swept every award there is out there. NFCA All-American, D1 Softball All-American, D1 Softball National Player of the Year, Softball America Player of the Year. So future is bright for the sophomore.
I'll go ahead and give her an early congratulations on having the Tolosa Midway Field named after her in the future. Reese Atwood Field. It's coming. That's what's going to happen in softball down there at Tolosa.
Is that where she's from? I didn't know that's where she was from.
Yeah, Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
Corpus Christi. And by the way, for those that are just now going to get into softball, now it's at the World Series, Texas and Oklahoma are the top two seeds. They're on opposite sides of the bracket. The only way they play again is if it's for all the marbles. So that would be a heck of a way to end the softball season if the 1 and 2 seeds make it. Oklahoma's path, even though it's all difficult once you get to the World Series, Oklahoma's path a little easier. And nothing's easy, but easier because the chalk won on the Texas side. Texas is playing 8 Stanford, then you have 4 Oklahoma State, 5 Florida. On the other side, Oklahoma's got 10 seed Duke. And then there was another upset on that side of the bracket. So maybe a little easier. I mean, Oklahoma hadn't lost in, 4 years in the NCAA tournament, so it doesn't really even matter at this point who they play. But we'll see if Texas and Oklahoma meet.
I would add this. The one I was talking to Brett Wilkinson, the director's cup updates guy, and this Texas 1-8 round versus Stanford actually matters as it relates to the director's cup points. And Stanford does have a star pitcher that will be going up against Texas tonight. And Jerry, just one point of clarification. In the College World Series, in baseball, this happens too. If you lose your first round match, you flip brackets. So Texas, if they lost, or if OU lost round one, they might go into the other person's bracket.
True.
And so they might play. Because it's double elimination, they might play before the finals. But if they keep winning, to your point, they'll go all the way and would not meet until the finals.
Hey, Blake, I got a good question here to start things off again.
Okay, go ahead.
Who are the 3 best opposing SEC QBs Texas faces in 2024? I think that's a really good question.
I don't think there's any doubt Carson Beck's one of them. I had the pleasure to be on with Tony Barnhart and Paul Feinbaum yesterday on their show and talked a little bit beforehand, before we went on. They love and think as much of Carson Beck internally as we see externally. So to your point, Jerry, like sometimes you just see a guy and, man, he looks good. Wow, he's doing really well. According to Tony Barnhart, they really, really like Carson Beck behind the scenes too, not just in front of the camera when he's playing. Beyond that, it's a real question mark because I don't know. I think Connor Wegman at A&M is probably the second most talented, maybe the most talented, actually, in some respects, but has proven some of the least. I would also look in this group. I don't know. Beyond those two, I don't know that there is an NFL quarterback that they will face. Maybe Jackson Arnold, but he's young. Graham Mertz at Florida is not that guy. I don't know.
What's interesting about this Texas schedule? Let's go through this real quick. Mississippi State transfer quarterback Blake Shapen, who Texas is familiar with. Oklahoma first year starter Jackson Arnold. He was going to leave if Oklahoma didn't let Dylan Gabriel go. George, obviously, Carson Beck signed out of Mandarin High School. Same high school Jamie French goes to. Vanderbilt transfer from New Mexico State, I believe. Kid's a really good player, actually. Vanderbilt, he's an upgrade for them. Florida, Graham Mertz returning, was a transfer from Wisconsin. He's backed up, but be backed up probably by DJ Lagway, the five-star freshman out of Willis. Arkansas, transfer Taylen Green from Boise State. Kentucky, two transfers, Brock Vandegrift and Wimstat from Rutgers. Then Texas A&M, Wiegman and Marcel Reed, who was a transfer from Fresno State. So think about how many transfer quarterbacks Texas is facing. I mean, that's kind of crazy to think about in itself. Mississippi State, new starter transfer. Vanderbilt, same. Florida, second-year starter that was a transfer. Arkansas, first-year starter transfer. Kentucky, first-year starter transfer. A&M, Marcel Reed started the bowl game. Wiegman was out, transfer at quarterback. So that's just kind of wild to think about with Texas's schedule this year.
Very true. Okay, guys, we have a super chat here that we need to read from UT Boy. Thank you, UT Boy, for the super chat. He says, good morning, family, and hook 'em. Shout out to the family.
Always jealous when UT Boy checks in from Emerald Bay. Great spot.
Hey, somebody checked in from Hong Kong this morning. So
that's a first.
We're worldwide today on Texas Football.
I see a lot of people checking in from vacation. Did I drink coffee?
I know. I believe the hardest thing maybe about being here in Destin, my wife is not with me, by the way, right?
That's never good.
Maybe the hardest thing is you're watching as you're going through the lobby. Intermittently, you see people in bathing suits going out to the beach in the pool. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I've got to go do this interview. I'm not going to be able to go get in the pool in a minute. To the beach once. Yeah, I've been to the beach once since I've been here, and I like barely put my feet in the sand, and then said, oh, I've got to go get another coach is going to be on the record here in a little bit. So there we go. Henry C., I'm a Texas ex who is currently based in Hong Kong. Nice to meet you, Henry. Thanks for everything.
And we got a lot of people asking, Bobby, about your appearance on Paul Finebaum. We will have that posted to the On Texas Football social media channels here in just a little bit after the show, or we'll also post it on the message boards over at ontexasfootball.com. So just a little bit to do that after this ends, but we'll get to it. And we got a lot of questions about the Horns' newest commitment, James Simon. First off, Jerry, we've had a few questions regarding his speed. R. McDonald 86, for example, says, do you think he's 4.5-ish?
I think he's a 4.6 guy that's quicker than fast, that's going to be quicker to the second level than he is riding out with speed. Bobby kind of mentioned his big runs will be 15, 20, 25-yard runs at the power four level. He's not going to be a guy that just runs away from people. That's not his game. He is going to be a between the tackles runner that has a great, great contact balance, really good jump cut, skip cut. He has that backside vision. He sees that cutback. But he's a guy who will be 5'11 and a half, 215, 220 pounds when all said and done. And he's going to be just more of a pad dropper, a guy that falls forward. And he's going to maximize short runs and not be a long run guy. His big plays, I think Bobby could be out of the passing game because he's so smooth catching the football, and because he's so instinctive, he just turns up the field immediately. So he can win off of instincts at times as a running back more than he will pure speed.
He'll get a lot of one-on-one opportunities there too in the flats. And I remember what we talked about, Jerry, what I thought his strength was, is making people miss one-on-one. And so if he can do that in the flat, he gets a lot more yardage that way. The other thing I would say is if you're looking for a current roster comparison for him, and I think Christian Clark and him have a very – geez, there we go. I didn't even see this, Zane. I really didn't before I said it. But is James Simon a comp to Christian Clark, Zane Petty asks? Yeah, to me he is. I think that Christian Clark is a little more compact.
Yeah.
Would be a better word to put it physically. So he's more of like a little bouncing ball, you know, inside the interior, where Simon is a little bit, got a little bit more long length to him, maybe a little bit better outside zone runner type of guy, but very similar in what their strengths are, which I think is making people miss in the hole.
Agree.
And we got a lot of good questions to get to, guys. Plenty of time to get your questions in. But, Jerry, before we get to those questions, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about one of our newest sponsors, Omaha Steaks.
Look, I got to tell you about them because I can't show you the Omaha Steaks and chicken. It's all gone. It lasted 48 hours. It's all gone. Freezer's empty. Send more Omaha Steaks. My door is always open to what you guys send. But with Father's Day right around the corner, what do you give the man that has everything? Easy. You give him an experience he'll never forget. You give him Omaha Steaks. The Father Day experts at Omaha Steaks have made it easy to put a smile on the big guy's face this summer with hand-selected gift packages starting at just $89. Just go to omahasteaks.com and use promo on Texas, all caps, at checkout for an additional discount when you shop gourmet gift packages for Father's Day. With Omaha Steaks, the possibilities are endless. Endless flavor, I already checked that one off. Endless variety, check that one off. And endless value. Truly, they have perfected more than steak, and your dad is guaranteed to love every bite. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo on Texas to get exclusive savings. Shop for unforgettable gifts that are guaranteed to make dad's day. Because there's one thing Omaha Steak knows, it's that dads want steak. And people that read this promo want steak.
I bought my dad some yesterday. So I got an extra $10 off using that code on Texas.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Now, this is going out on a limb. I like it, Odin Horns. I will remember that if Florida wins 8 games, because that would be quite the call. Outside of people who cover Florida for a living and have to make their fan base happy. I haven't heard a lot of people go out on the 8-win limb with Florida.
I being down here in Destin and having talked to about 4 or 5 writers that cover Florida at some level, whether it's the Orlando Sentinel or the guys at Every Day, but Every Day should be Saturday. My take on that is they don't expect 8 wins with Graham Mertz at quarterback. So we'll see exactly where that heads.
But and by the way, not expect that. Florida got a really good receiver from Arizona State late out of the portal, but Florida didn't do the damage out of the portal that Ole Miss did, right? I mean, so when you look at Florida last year and you say, oh, well, look at this schedule. Man, this is the hardest schedule I've ever seen. I'm not sure they did enough in the portal to make up the ground that they're going to need on that schedule. Miami did more right out of the portal. Texas did more out of the portal. I mean, Georgia has a much better roster. I mean, you kind of go down their schedule and you're like, wow, there's a lot of teams that actually did more in the portal than they did as well. So it'll be interesting with Florida. I really think, Odin Horns, if Florida has any shot to get to 8-4, they have to beat Miami to start the season. If they don't, that's going to be tough.
Just based on what I'm hearing, you know, there's a lot of consternation there right now, because here's what's happening. Mario Cristobal is building at Miami, Jerry.
Yeah.
Okay. He's doing that. Mike Norvell created a team that won all their games at Florida State. The last thing Florida wanted is for Mike Norvell to succeed. And you have to remember, just 2 years ago, Mike Norvell was on the cusp of being fired.
No doubt.
And they hired Billy Napier simultaneous to that. I think Florida State has found its way in the portal to help themselves more than Florida. And now you have this, I mean, one of the talks down here is about Jaden Rashada's lawsuit against the Florida coach, Billy Napier. And then this is the quarterback at Georgia that's a transfer that literally is suing the Florida coach and a couple other people for, what, 8 figures like $10+ million or whatever it is. There's just, look, you wouldn't want to be, we can talk about roster reductions, all that stuff. You would not want to be Florida right now because there's not a light at the end of the tunnel. You're getting sued. Your head coach is getting sued. You've got murderer's row as it relates to scheduling. Yeah. And I mean, look, they play Florida State. They play Miami and they play UCF.
It's wild.
What if the University of Florida goes 0-3 in those games? That's not.
They'll be having a press conference for Lane. They'll be having a press conference for Lane Kiffin or Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah. By the way, Eli Drinkwitz is the most unlikely looking head football coach of a major. I mean, having seen him at the party the other day, he does not come in and look like a football coach. Yeah. Right when he walks up, about 5'10", 5'11", little nerdy with glasses, you know, got the hair part on the side.
He looks like the head coach couldn't make it, and the analyst came in this spot, right?
Yeah, but you know what?
The analytics guy.
You say that, he's a damn good coach. Top 10 team at a school that hasn't really been a top 10 team.
Yeah, he's doing a good job there. Very good job.
All right, guys, let's go on to the next questions here. This next one from Mark Valdez, he says, how grateful we should be that we weren't beset with the scenario the Sooners faced this offseason. Imagine if Arch would have threatened transferring if you were stayed one more season.
You know what? That's a great piece. And I think that, Mark, a lot of people think like that. And that's why we saw all those clickbait articles about Arch transferring or wanting to transfer or should transfer or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That you're not illogical, I guess is the best way to say it. That's not the wrong way that most people would think. But what they discount too heavily is who the Mannings are and what they want to be. The long term plan for Arch Manning has not changed since he made the decision to go to Texas. And what I mean by that, his long-term plan is to keep improving enough to be drafted in the NFL and then go have a 15 to 20 year career in the NFL. Nothing about that has changed. The coaching staff hasn't changed. Steve Sarkisian didn't walk out the door. AJ Milwee didn't walk out the door. So everything for them is online. I mean, it's still tracking. And so, you know, I understand why people want to be try to get him out of Texas, you know, and other people do because of this. But I'm not surprised by that he stayed. I'm not surprised by his long-term thinking either. And I think that Texas fans should be very, very happy, to your point, that they're not in a situation where QB2 is shopping his wares across the country.
I'll go ahead and make some predictions, Bobby. Quinn will have a really good season, go off to the NFL. Then what are we going to hear for stories next year? Again, that will prove the people are just clickbaiters or have no understanding of the Mannings. Arch will play one year at Texas and head off to the NFL. That means they didn't do their research on the family. Arch can't live up to the expectations too much high. That means they haven't followed the Manning family. Watch, just watch all this stuff play out. It's going to play out. You can predict the articles 12 months from now what you're going to be seeing. It's very easy at this point. Very easy.
And we're going to stay on the quarterback questions, guys. Frank says, in what ways do you think we'll possibly see Quinn improve this year?
I think a couple of the ways that we hope to see him improve are in tight quarters and quicker throws. Now, I think he does a great job with RPOs, but I think he can get quicker in the RPO game, Jerry. And I think that will be better inside the red zone. I also think that probably the thing that most fans would say he needs to get better at is pocket awareness. He took too many self sacks last year. And so combining those two things together, Texas scores more points this year if he if he's able to improve those two things.
And if he improves those two things early in the season, which I think is going to be the challenge for him, that means he's got a lot of trust in a bunch of new faces at wide receiver, which would be a very good thing for the Texas season. Because I think early in the season, first three games, one of those being a huge one at Michigan, obviously, Texas is maybe it's a little bit slower offense from what we saw early last year. Because last year when Texas went to Alabama, you know, you had Jordan Whittington, you had Xavier Worthers, you had JT Sanders, who all had years in the offensive system. A.D. Mitchell was the newcomer. Gunnar Helm, the same, right? And the running backs, other than Cedric Baxter. I mean, Jonathan Brooks had been in the system and in the program for multiple years. This year, you have a lot of new faces at wide receiver. So if you get the ball out with timing, you show improvements in some of those areas Bobby just talked about early in the season, that means you have a lot of belief in the new wide receivers that they're going to be where they're supposed to be in a tough offensive scheme to pick up. That would be a very positive sign for me.
Jerry, I had some free time in between when the coaches and the ADs and the presidents came out yesterday. And I've rewatched two games late last year for Quinn Ewers, TCU and Iowa State. Okay. Iowa State, he got self-sacked twice in situations that put Texas in bad situation. Not bad, but worse than, right? Third and long, second and long, etc. The second half of the Iowa State game, he got a lot better. And I will say this, there were a couple of throws at TCU that made me think, okay, he's starting to realize that he needs to get it out quicker. There was a go route in the red zone to Adonai Mitchell, or close to the red zone, within the 30-yard line heading in, that he threw to Adonai Mitchell early, and it was just barely a miss, And I said, okay, he's starting to realize how quickly he has to get these out. And it was a bang-bang play, so he has it in him. And I think we saw a little bit more of that in that beginning, really, in the second half of the Iowa State game. I started seeing a guy that, okay, I don't want to get self-sacked here. Because Iowa State was a bad look in the first half from his pocket awareness standpoint.
And then one other quarterback question, guys, then we'll move on here. And this is more about the future. Hunter Bradford says, here in Kerrville, Texas, coffee and football is a great way to begin the day. I got a question about Sark's quarterback recruiting. He went extremely big game hunting with his first two, with Quinn and Arch. Both were high-level five-stars. No disrespect to Owens, Lacey, and the 26 prospects, but they aren't on that level. Am I wrong?
Well, so here's the thing. I would say this. There's one thing that those guys have to have. They have to be able to make all the throws. So if you can't make all the throws, that means in Sark's scheme, which is an NFL scheme, you're having to make NFL-level throws, then you aren't going to be recruited by Steve Sarkisian. No, that's just number one, not happening. So anybody that he recruits, he deems has NFL arm talent. That's the first thing. So aside from rankings, then I think it's the gamesmanship, that there's a lot of things that go with it, right, that Steve Sarkisian's attracted to with a quarterback. You know, look, KJ Lacy, he could end up being a great player, but because he's 5'11 and a half, closing on 6 foot, probably 186 pounds right now. It'll be 190, 192 pounds when he graduates from high school. He's going to be ranked lower. Just a reality. I mean, you're not Kyler Murray athletically. Kyler Murray's a super freak. He goes in that the Corian Moore, Adrian Peterson, Derek Johnson, all that stuff. He was a super freak. There just aren't guys like that very, very often. So I think KJ Lacy's a very good prospect. 26 guys is too early. Dia Bell is ranked top 20 in the country prior to junior season by people. Troy Hoon's going to be moving way up the charts this year. He's going to end up top 50 kid by most people. So that 26 class, if it's one of those two guys, both those guys may end up being five stars if you care about that in the rankings.
Okay, y'all. And then our next question is actually more of a comment, but I want to get y'all's opinion on it. Aggressively optimistic Texas fan says, I feel like the biggest trap game is Kentucky on the schedule. I'm going to put the schedule back up here. Who, in y'all's opinion, is the biggest trap game?
I think that's a good one, Bobby. I think that's a good one because it's, you know, it's before A&M, in between Arkansas and Texas A&M. So here's what I say at the end of these seasons. If you're playing for something, I don't think there are any trap games. So I look, if Texas is sitting there at 9-2 after Arkansas, then there aren't any trap games. But what I'll say about Kentucky is outside of Michigan and A&M, Kentucky and Georgia, those are the four top defensive lines Texas is going to face on that schedule this year. Kentucky's Deion Walker's big time. They got some good defensive linemen over at Kentucky, really good players. So I think it could be a more physical game than even the three games before, after Georgia. Not that Florida's not physical. Not that Sam Pittman won't try to be physical. I just don't know what they're going to have at that point. But Kentucky's going to be a physical game. Might actually come at the right time to face them right before you face A&M in a weird way.
My take on this is twofold. When I first saw this schedule, I thought Kentucky was the trap game. So let's talk about that. But Jerry's already went over that. I think there's a couple others here. So what's UTSA and Jeff Traylor going to look like in game three after you come home from playing another early season great game like they did last year? Remember what happened to Texas last year. Texas went to Alabama, kicked some butt, came home, and laid an egg for three quarters against Wyoming. Okay? Jeff Traylor and Craig Bohl are somewhat similar coaches. They're not going to beat themselves, and they're going to be smart. Right? And so I'm not saying UTSA has the dudes to run with Texas, but Wyoming didn't have the dudes
exactly
to run with Texas last year, and they did for three quarters. Yes, replacing the QB at UTSA is going to be tough, but it's Owen McCown, who started some at Colorado 2 years ago.
Josh McCown's son.
Yeah, before Shedeur Sanders. So they have guys. Yeah, and that Wyoming team was coached well. So is UTSA is going to be similar. So that's I don't want to bemoan it because I don't know that they have the dudes to run with Texas. I'll say that. But that's a little bit of a trap game. I tell you, the other one that is a little bit of a trap game to me is Mississippi State. And if it weren't the first game of the SEC for Texas,
I agree.
I think it might be because you're probably going to be 3-1 or 4-0 at that point. Mississippi State, you'll probably be 4-1, 5-0 heading into OU. And so, you know, everybody knows that's what's on the schedule next is a big game. But I would say UTSA and Kentucky right now are the ones that I've kind of got circled. Arkansas, I don't want to say that yet, Jerry, and I'll say why. A lot of Texas fans, younger Texas fans, as well as a lot of Texas players don't appreciate going into Fayetteville, maybe, like they should. But what's that team going to – are they even going to be having Sam Pittman as their coach?
Right.
10 games into it. I mean, it's possible Florida and Arkansas have different coaches by the time Texas plays them.
Correct.
I mean, both of those teams. So I don't want to say Arkansas is a quote-unquote trap game yet. So that's where I'm at.
Okay, and then Cody Hook says, this may be a hot take, but I like our wide receiver room more this year. What do y'all think?
Look, I think I'm not going to say more. It's first and second round pick, but I think Texas has more talent and depth if they suffered a frontline injury. Last year, that was a bit of concern for me because there was too much inexperience behind it. But if you look at this wide receiver room, you have Isaiah Bond, Auburn killer. You have Silas Bolden, a lot of experience at the Power 5 level. Matthew Golden, Power 5 experience, really good football player. You have Jonte Cook, a year of experience in the scheme. You're going to be a much more comfortable player year two. Same with DeAndre Moore. Then you bring in five-star freak Ryan Wingo, right? And that's not discounting the other guys. Ryan Niblett is made a really good catch in the spring game. He didn't transfer. He said, I'm here to compete. That guy's very fast. A year in the system, a year learning the position. So I think Texas is more set up from a total speed of the room, total playmaking of the room, if you had an injury. Last year, Texas was pretty lucky, pretty healthy at the wide receiver position. Actually, really lucky. If you have an injury this year, I think Texas has a better room to handle adversity that may come during the season, Bobby.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree that Texas has a better group of wide receivers because I Worthy and Mitchell combined with the experience of Whittington and team aspect that he brought to the table as a blocker, I don't see that with this group. I don't see right now, I don't see an alpha like Xavier Worthy. I don't see a guy, a 50-50 ball catcher like Adonai Mitchell. I mean, who you throw to on third and 13 against TCU right now? What player do you ask to go beat somebody up the sideline in one-on-one, back shoulder? I don't know the answer to that. Steve Sarkisian did. Adonai Mitchell, right? Who do you do that this year to? Who scares you so much that you have to play a safety over the top like Xavier Worthy right now? Maybe Isaiah Bond, but he's not – Isaiah Bond's not Xavier Worthy, guys. So I like the room, to Jerry's point, and the depth. I do think the depth is better. I don't think the top two or even the top three are – I don't think they play off of one another like they did last year as well, necessarily. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think that. I think this group has to go prove it. Here's my thought on it. I think we knew early in the season last year that the receive when you said, okay, Texas is going to play Bama, you didn't say, are the receivers going to be ready for that game? You never questioned it. A.D. Mitchell caught touchdown passes in the biggest games he ever played, yep, all the way through his college career. Xavier Worthy, Jordan Whittington had all that experience, and I had J.T. Sanderson, all that experience in the scheme, in the system, all entering contract years, by the way. So that there wasn't much of a question that these guys were ready to go to Alabama. I think with this group this year, there's a little more prove it to them. I think there's more talent overall in the room. Doesn't mean they're better, but they still have to go prove it, to Bobby's point. I think they have to go – they're going to have to go make more plays on the field early this season for – people to start defining who these guys are. But the talent is really, really good.
Talent it overall is special. I mean, Ryan Wingo, in the latter half of his freshman year, we'll see. You know, is he the 50-50 guy right now out of the gate, Odin? Odenhorn says Wingo's the 50-50 ball guy at 6'2". I don't know if he is right away. I don't know. We'll see.
I want to say this about A.D. Mitchell, too. I don't even know if I would call him necessarily a high-end 50-50 ball guy. I thought he was great at tracking the ball, selling it, playing the ball in the air. A.D. Mitchell wasn't the guy that jumped 35 inches off the ground and snagged the ball over the DB. He wasn't even that guy. He was a great ball tracker, and you knew he was going to make a play on the ball over his shoulder. Right shoulder, left shoulder, didn't matter. But a 50-50 ball winner, that freak guy, I don't even think Texas had that guy last year. They just had a collection of tremendous, tremendous players.
And guys, we have a super chat here. Actually, first, let me thank you, T-Boy, for the super chat regarding Jonte. And then we have a super chat from Bobby. And Bobby says, when will the summer arrivals be on campus?
Yeah, so if you didn't see, we had Javion Cole on the Longhorn live stream last night. If you didn't get a chance to see that, go back and watch that. Right about the midway point, Bobby, he came on, talked. He got into Austin Tuesday. June workouts begin June 2nd. So, or that Monday, I guess that's June 3rd. The elite camps June 1st for the young kids. And then those workouts start the following Monday. But all the all those guys are arriving on campus either now, Silas Bolden already on campus, Javion Cole, or coming up this weekend. That's when the high school, the four high school guys, Santana Wilson, Melvin Hills, Michael Kern, and Nate Kibble will be on campus. Then your four transfers, Silas Bolden, Javion Cole, Bill Norton, and Jermaine Lole. All those guys will be on campus either now or through the weekend, headed in those first workouts on Monday.
And another super chat here from Ryan Nelson. He says, Bobby and Jerry, how dangerous would Arkansas be if they get Gus?
I think they'd be better off than Sam Pittman.
Yeah, better off. I agree.
I think Arkansas is one of those places right now where you need a wily coach that can do a little more with a little less. If that makes that that's the proposition at Arkansas. I was talking to somebody yesterday. How bizarre is it right now? I mean, you know who the coach of the Razorbacks could be 10 games into the season? Bobby Petrino.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the offensive coordinator at Arkansas now, guys.
Yeah.
So he's returning to the scene of the crime. So while Gus Malzahn, I think, would make a lot of sense at Arkansas, don't put it past the folks there to see if Petrino can't do something instead of Gus before they go to Gus.
I think Arkansas right now is one of the toughest recruiting jobs in Power Four. And I say that because with Texas and OU moving to the SEC, I mean, it just hurts them that much more. Not that they were beating Oklahoma and Texas on players necessarily, but they still had the SEC song they could sing. But where is their recruiting geography? I mean, they're in a very tough spot. When Missouri's winning, they have Kansas City. They have St. Louis. Where does Arkansas really have? I mean, you think about it, and that is one hell of a tough recruiting job. Are you going to go into Atlanta and get the guys you need to compete at a high level in the SEC? No. You have to evaluate on as high a level and have as many hits from guys that weren't nationally recruited by the Blue Blood programs as anybody now in college football. I really believe that. And the other problem they have is a lot of their NIL funds are going to John Calipari from here on out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Calipari, now, of all the basketball coaches – that I can say this down here in Destin, Jerry. The two guys that got the most PR whenever that swarmed them, the new Kentucky coach,
yep,
who, by the way, was the tallest guy at the cocktail party yesterday. there was no doubt he was the tallest one. I think he's like 6'7", 6'8", right? And Calipari. Calipari had like a flock of seagulls surrounding yep. him every time he moved in that lobby yesterday. I think that as I look at Arkansas, historically, back when they were really good, it was Dallas, East Texas, a yep. little bit of Houston, I-20 North in Louisiana, yep. essentially from Longview all the way through to Vicksburg, Mississippi, and Jackson, Mississippi, okay? And then they would go into, your point, Missouri, Kansas City and St. Louis, as well as the state of Arkansas. The problem, and over to Memphis, right? Because West Memphis and Tennessee, they're connected basically to Arkansas. So that would be their area. Missouri's taken away from them because Eli Drinkwitz is doing a great job. And the other players are national players that other people like Texas are going in to get Ryan Wingo.
Yeah.
Dallas has been taken away from them somewhat because they left the Big 12, so they weren't playing Texas anymore.
Yeah.
East Texas, A&M and Texas kind of fought over that. And again, because for so long, they weren't in the same conference as Texas and Texas A&M. That kind of dissipated. They've lost I-20 in northern Louisiana. Other than Arkansas, they don't have.
It's tough.
Yeah. They don't have that next spot where they can actually go get not just good players, but top shelf players to compete with the elite. That's their issue. So they have to find other ways to do it.
They got to do. They got to go to the Norvell model. They got to go in Florida State's obviously a better job than Arkansas, but they have to win big in the portal on evaluation and getting on guys early, maybe even recruiting them to the portal in the future.
They did a little bit of that with Antonio Anderson, the wide receiver that's pretty good out of West Texas A&M.
Yeah. Last year.
Hey, Hunter Bradford and a couple other people asking about, what about Jeff Traylor at Arkansas? He spent a couple of years at Arkansas, at least 1 year with Chad Morris at Arkansas. I know he wants Baylor probably, Jerry.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Arkansas, I brought that up. I brought that up because he's – I know Hunter Yurcich really likes him, Jeff Traylor, from his time at Arkansas. So it'll be interesting. He'll be a name if that job opens up. He'll be a name on that list.
Hunter Yurcich is the AD at Arkansas.
Yeah. But is Baylor or Arkansas a better job?
I know which one's a more winnable job.
I would go to Baylor right now in the current landscape.
We'll see.
Okay, guys. Bobby, before we get to these last couple of questions here, can you tell folks out there about Rick Favreau and Austin Underground one last time?
Yeah, absolutely. Since 2004, Rick and his team at Austin Underground have specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider just too risky. Rick and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground. Thank you, Rick, and your team for your continued sponsorship of Coffee and Football.
And we have a super chat here from Football Junkie. Thank you, Football Junkie. He says, how does Texas team beat on defense compared to the other SEC teams they're going to play this fall? Lindy Sport Magazine has them high overall as total defense. Top 20, in fact.
Ooh, that's actually a really good question. Defense, Bobby. Georgia, more.
Alabama, more. They're not playing them, but Alabama has more team speed on defense. Florida has more team speed on defense than Texas. A lot of SEC teams will have more team speed because other than I don't know that Texas is particularly fast on defense. I mean, they're not, right?
I think they've upgraded.
Texas is upgraded, but I wouldn't call Texas a really fast defense at this point. Now, what is JV and Cole's addition? I mean, Jadae Barron is not a fast play, not a fast guy. Okay. People have to understand that. He is fast enough.
Right.
Typically, but he's not. Manny Muhammad is not a quote unquote fast guy. He plays fast.
Right.
And there's a difference. Michael Taft is certainly not a fast guy. Does he play fast? He can. You know, so I don't know. I don't know that Andrew Makuba is a good player, but is he categorically fast? I don't know.
Here's my take on it is Texas got quicker and faster on defense. Because Colin Simmons, Trey Moore, big additions as far as twitch off the edge. They got quicker, faster. More talent, another top five class coming in the program, right? They got faster at safety as far as football speed. I mean, Keaton Crawford could line up and run a really fast 40, but he didn't have the eyes to play safety, so his athleticism didn't even matter. Jaron Thompson was not a guy that got faster in college. He was one of the guys, the few guys that gained weight and got slower. Makuba, obviously an upgrade as far as speed and playing speed. At that position, Derek Williams in year two will be a faster football player than he was in year one because he's year two in college. And then some of the freshman guys, Xavier Filsome, can really run. He's got to go through his learning process, but he can really run at that position. So I think Texas and Javion Cole at corner. So I think Texas upgraded their speed and quickness on defense from a year ago. But again, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan's defense will be faster than Texas. I know it's not SEC, but Michigan will have a faster defense than Texas will. when they play them. I think Texas is fast enough, but they're not going to be a top four, like pure speed defense in the SEC for me.
Okay, guys. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football. But first, Bobby, before we get out of here, I know you got a lot going on today. Like we said, last day of the SEC meetings, but there's also a lot going on at ontexasfootball.com. I want you to tell folks out there about that if they're not familiar with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Please visit us and sign up and subscribe to On Texas Football. We need people to subscribe so we can keep doing what we love to do. OnTexasFootball.com. Right now we have a special. It's $39.95 annually. That's $39.95 annually for subscription when you use the code OTFOG. That's OTFOG and $39.95 for On Texas Football for an entire year. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. Not only am I here in Destin, but Jerry, you guys have a big weekend ahead of you with Texas hosting a ton of high school prospects at the Elite Camp on June 1st. Then the next three weekends after that, it's all recruiting, 40-plus official visitors. Again, OTFOG, $39.95 for 1 year at OnTexasFootball.com. I'm filing reports. Jerry's got news and notes. CJ's got news and notes each and every day on the recruiting stuff. So if you're a big Texas fan, there's no better place than ontexasfootball.com.
That's right. And if you haven't already, please hit that like and subscribe button. We would definitely appreciate that. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime we post a video, post any kind of content, go live, whatever it may be. And between that and the coverage at OnTexasFootball.com, you should be covered with your Longhorns news around the clock. And guys, thank you all for tuning in. We got to thank our sponsors, Rick Valvro and Austin Underground, along with Omaha Steaks. Thank you for the super chats, the great questions. And stay tuned. We'll have a lot more later today. And then, of course, over on OnTexasFootball.com. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Hook up.